Today is January 19th, the year 2000. Amazing. And I am with, let me see if I've pronounced it correctly, Wang Shi?
Yes.
Okay. Not too bad for
not too bad.
For a non-Chinese, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And we are in your office at the Burnham Institute.
Right.
For the first of your Pew Scholars in the Biomedical Sciences interviews. So I usually like to start with something very simple, like when and where were you born?
Yeah, I was born October 26, 1961, in the coastal city of China called Dalian, in the northern part of China. That was a bad time in China, you know, during the right after the Great Leap Forward movement, and there's a lot of farming going on. So there was a lot of farming and bad nutrition. So kids born at that time generally don't have very very much. Food. I mean, so you can see most of the kids born at that time are kind of malnutritioned.
So were you then born in a farming community?
No, my mother was a doctor in a military hospital in that city. So, generally speaking, the military personnel fared better than the average people, like in factory or in the village. And but my father was in Beijing, so we were my mother and father were separated at the time.
By their choice, or they were separated?
Well, they were separated after graduating from medical school. So one was assigned to Dalian and the other was assigned to Beijing. And I guess they were not in love at the college. They started their relationship after graduation.
Oh, I see.
And then they tried to work out the family. That was only later and my mother moved to Beijing.
Okay. But that was after you were born?
After I was born, yeah.
Yeah.
When I was about 6 years old, then family moved to Beijing.
So, now, was your mother in the military, or was she a civilian doctor working with the military?
Well,
or is there such a distinction?
There's now there is, but at that time no. There were they wear uniforms, the military uniforms. They both my parents went to this college in Harbin.
In where?
In Harbin, the north part of China, Manchuria.
Manchuria.
Yeah, in that region. that college, at that time it was 1950s, from 1951 to 56 or 7. They were, in 49, you know, the communist took over China, and then they fought the Korean War with the America. And so my parents were recruited right after the 49 revolution. Were recruited to the military together with many high school, about 100 or so, 200 or so high school graduates, mainly from three provinces in central China, Hubei, Henan, and Hunan. So they were recruited to get trained so that they can later go to Korea to fight the war. And because because they were educated, so they were not trained to actually as soldiers, but they were trained as probably as doctors.
I see.
Yeah. So they were wearing uniforms when they were in this college.
Mm-hmm.
And then the war in Korea is over. So before they graduate, so in 1953, I think the war was over.
Right.
And then in 1956, they graduated, and then all of this class get assigned to different military
mm-hmm.
units
mm-hmm.
all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
There are either biomedical research institutes or hospitals. So my father was assigned to a Chinese military medicine Academy of Military Medicine.
Academy of Military Medicine.
Right.
Yeah.
And then my mother was sent to this hospital in Da.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, are they, your parents, were they trained in Western medicine or in traditional Chinese
Western medicine?
Western medicine.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. That whole college was. It was in Western medicine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. So, when did they marry?
When did they marry? 57, 58?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure exactly, but around that time.
But they were still in two different places.
Right.
At that
time, that was not so uncommon, actually.
Right.
And people don't take it as such a strange thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's common.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost... You see this kind of family everywhere.
Mm.
Yeah.
And do you have other brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have a younger brother who is like 1 year and a half younger.
So you were the first?
Yes.
Okay. This was before the time when they started limiting families to one child.
Right. That was before.
That was during the Cultural Revolution?
Yeah, during and after.
Uh-huh.
After, I think.
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s, mm-hmm. they started to have that. Some of my parents' classmates,
mm-hmm.
one of them is very close, had actually three
mm-hmm.
children.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, so the first few years of your life were in this northern province?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And did you see much of your father during that time?
Not much.
Not much.
When I was born, I think he was not there.
Oh, wow.
And so my father was more like a workaholic.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. So my mother is more traditional type of women that take care of families.
Mm-hmm.
So, not much.
So, then did your mother stop working when you were a baby? Because in many families, the grandparents took care of the children and the women worked.
Yes, that happened also in my case. So my grandparents sometimes come over to live with us for a few months or half a year to a year.
Mm-hmm.
And also I was sent to my grandparents' home in Wuhan,
mm-hmm.
in the Wuhan city of Wuhan, and lived with them for 1 year or so.
Uh-huh. How old were you when that happened?
I think it was first grade.
Oh, okay.
I actually attended school in there,
okay.
in that city. So, yeah, that happens. So the grandparents did take part in raising us, and also we have hired a nanny type,
a nanny,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
to help when I was in that northern city.
Uh-huh.
My mother continued work.
I see.
Yeah, you don't expect to quit work at mm-hmm. that kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So would these be your mother's parents or your father's
parents? My father's parents.
Your father's
My
parents.
Mother's parents were already dead at that time.
Oh.
So I never seen my mother's parents.
Uh-huh.
But that was partly because my mother was the smallest child of his her father, and her father had married. So my mother's mother was was her father's second wife.
Mm.
And then during the war with Japan, my mother's mother died of pneumonia, which if it were not in the war, it could be cured easily if with that antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, it was just not available. They were in this very backward city.
Well, actually, penicillin didn't really become available until in the mid-40s anyway.
Yeah, that's when it happened, mid-40s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's with the war in Japan.
Yeah.
I think it's around that time.
Okay.
That's my impression.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she died relatively young.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother's father, of course, is already pretty old, which when he had my mother.
Sure.
So then he has this hypertension problem. So he passed away with bleeding in the brain or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A stroke.
Yeah,
a
stroke something in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But,
so you never knew them.
Yeah, so but my father's, my grandparents on my father's side, they are very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
They lived over, you know, well over 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Only passed away after I came here, came to the States maybe a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So, what was your brother like?
My brother
Your brother like?
My brother is a typical second born, I guess. It's very low-key, relaxed, and not very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
He is doing very well academically in the middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he, from middle school, he went to a very good, very prestigious high school in Beijing. But then he started going downhill academically because he started playing. And so then he ended up with going to an average university in Beijing.
Uh-huh.
And from there, he went to an institute of related to his major, which is something about the mechanical engineering.
Uh-huh.
And then there's really not much to do in that kind of research institute. Then he got a chance to go into this trade company.
Trade?
It's trade company,
uh-huh.
International trading company.
Mm-hmm.
It's called it's a Chinese aviation air aviation. Something related to aircraft equipment and all sorts of machineries. And they're doing a lot of deals with South America right now. So my brother right now is in Peru.
Peru?
Yeah, Peru. And he's trying to sell them trucks, military trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So he get into this kind of business.
Uh-huh.
I guess financially he's doing very well right now. And this is a state-controlled trading company.
Uh-huh.
So in China, only recent, in the past, all the tradings between the local factory and the outside world has to be mediated by an intermediary agency like mm-hmm. this trading company.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they're doing, connecting the customers in the West with the producers in China.
Uh-huh. Okay. So that's what he does?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So when you were little kids, did you get along with him?
Yes, mostly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I said, I was more of a typical firstborn, and he was a typical secondborn.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of the time, he will just obey me.
Uh-huh.
So
how lucky for you.
Sometimes we fight also. And, yeah, that's kind of unfortunate. Sometimes your birth order control your fate and your personality. I saw that now from my own two boys.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one and the second one. The second one is just, you think, you worry how he will survive in this competitive society with all his firstborns being so dominant.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So is that how you would describe yourself growing up, more dominant or...?
Yeah, I would say more dominant, more conventional, conservative,
uh-huh.
traditional, that kind of mm-hmm. thing. So even now, if I talk with my brother about some politics and stuff, we have very different views.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, Taiwan, I like to see it reunited with China, even if we have to take it by force, but my brother is not so much worry about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm more of a conservative, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So at what age did you start to go to school?
7.
Oh, not till 7. Wow.
Yeah.
That's late compared to here. Kids here start at 3.
3?
Well, they go to preschool.
That's preschool.
Yeah.
In terms of kindergarten, yeah.
Kindergarten's
I went to
5, usually, here.
By 7, I meant go to real primary school, first grade.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Before that, I did went to go to kindergarten.
Uh-huh.
Maybe 4 or 5.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And is kindergarten academic at all, or is it just mostly play?
Mostly play. That's mm-hmm. my memory. I don't remember learning anything special.
Okay. So now, when did you go to Beijing? Now, how old were you?
I'm not sure exactly, because that time there was my memory was that I also went to Wuhan. I attended primary school there.
That was with your grandparents.
Yes.
Right.
So the reason for that was my mother had to be sent to a countryside to be a doctor for the peasants
mm-hmm.
and to get educated. You know, they're intellectuals, and
mm-hmm.
the government at that time is sending all these intellectuals to factories, to villages, to mm-hmm. countryside to work in the field. In the meantime, to serve the peasants. So,
when you say to work in the field, you mean to do farming in
yeah,
addition
yeah,
to
right.
taking
in addition
care
to
of them.
Taking care of them.
Okay.
So my mother was sent to Yan'an or something, you know, mm-hmm. the very poor places in China, where Yan'an is a place Mao led his troops to into the city. After the Long March, they went to Yan'an for some time to fight the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still a very poor place, and so. And then my father was somewhere working. So both me and my brother then was sent to relative homes. So I was sent to Wuhan to live with my grandparents. And then my brother was sent to Shanghai to live with a relative on my mother's side.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember I spent a year or so in Wuhan, and then I come back to Beijing.
Okay. So,
maybe 7 or 8.
Okay. Now, you know, here, the culture here is such that we would be horrified at splitting up a family like that. But I guess this was sort of normal.
Yeah, at that time was very normal.
Okay. Do you recall how you felt about it, you know, being sent away from your mother and
Don't remember
brother?
Anything.
You don't remember?
Yeah, I don't remember much. I guess I was used to without a father.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember how I felt when I separated from my mother.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think I'm more close with my mother than my father, mm-hmm. that's for sure. Yeah.
Okay. So then what were the circumstances that brought you all back together in Beijing again?
The circumstances, I think somehow my mother managed to find a job in the Beijing military hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they found it, but that's how she moved to Beijing.
Okay.
She has this job in another military
mm-hmm.
hospital,
mm-hmm.
which was not too far from where my father worked.
Okay.
It's about 15 minutes bus.
Mm-hmm. So at that point, did you all live together?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I lived in my father's military compound.
Uh-huh.
Where you actually have walls separating from the streets, the outside, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then the compound was guarded by mm-hmm. by about 30 soldiers
mm-hmm.
with guns standing
mm-hmm.
at the door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
That was a research institute of this military academy.
Oh, so your father was a researcher.
Yes.
Rather than did he practice?
No, medicine? He didn't practice medicine at all, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right after graduation, he was assigned to this mm-hmm. institute to do research. At the time, it was considered a more prestigious job to do research than to practice medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what did he do? What kind of research?
He does microbiology and some sort of, it's mostly applied type of microbiology. It's like how to detect pathogens. It may cause that if it's
okay.
making noises. So in military, you know, during wartime, if there is some bacterial warfare or something, you know, you need to be able to find, you know, to detect the bacteria or any
mm-hmm.
pathogen. So I think he studied how to detect them, you know, using antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
So he's into developing antibodies, monoclonals. And
mm-hmm.
he also developed some kind of instruments like a microscope,
mm-hmm.
a convenient type of microscope that's portable and you know
mm-hmm.
can be carried by soldiers applying in the field. So especially this fluorescent microscope.
Mm-hmm.
Normally it's a big setup.
Mm-hmm.
He developed a convenient setup to put immunofluorescence capacity to a regular microscope.
Mm-hmm.
So he did that kind of work. I think that work was highly praised
mm-hmm.
in China. He got some prize for that.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was especially difficult to do because he did all this work while in this Cultural Revolution period,
right.
where most people are not working on
mm-hmm.
this type of work. So I think he did pretty well in his career. So in his military academy, he was maybe one of the top 15 professors.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to turn the tape off for just a sec. Okay, we're back. So it sounds like you were around 7 when you went to Beijing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about, now, let's see, this would have been, you said you were born in 61. One. So this would have been about 1968.
Yes.
Okay. And when did the Cultural Revolution start? It was right around
66.
Then. Yeah. Okay. So tell me a little bit about your school experiences and then anything you remember about the Cultural Revolution.
School experience, I think, for primary school, we basically, because of the Cultural Revolution, we cannot go to very selective places. We went to school based on geography. Mm-hmm. So this school happens to be nearby, so we go to, not because it's a good school. Uh-huh. Even if it's a bad school, we have no choice but to go. Uh-huh. So the school I went to is not particularly great. Uh-huh. It's in the countryside. This military compound is located in the suburbs of Beijing.
Uh-huh.
So it's not in the downtown city area. So surrounded by farms.
Mm-hmm.
So this school is sort of like a farm school. And the quality is not so good. I think we still went through all the normal classes, and I didn't remember that we didn't learn just play or anything. So there's still classes every day, except the classes are the text that was taught was related to Cultural Revolution, so there mm-hmm. was a lot of political articles to mm-hmm. learn, mm-hmm. Like Mao's thoughts, Mao's writing.
Mao's
writing, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of his writings were mm-hmm. in the textbook.
Right.
So I remember memorizing some of his articles.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think the classes are not very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I had some interest in physical education
mm-hmm.
and also art, like
mm-hmm.
painting.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time I was very much into playing ping pong. And so I spent a lot of time after school time playing ping pong.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I think ping pong was also very popular in China,
mm-hmm.
and they just went, so just have some people won the championships.
Mm-hmm.
So I dreamed of becoming a professional ping pong player. So,
okay.
So I basically have two hobbies at that time, ping pong and art, and then the I did well in this schools. So I was sort of a class captain. You know,
mm-hmm.
in China, every class, about 40, 50 students, they select some leader sort of type positions
mm-hmm.
To head a student or something.
Is that based on your academic achievement or your popularity?
I think it's a relationship with the teacher and the academic achievement.
Uh-huh. Okay. So the teacher selected the leader?
I think the teacher selected.
Not the other student.
Not the students voting or something. Yeah, but I think my academic was very good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I always remember being at the top of the class in all the academics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Now, I actually have already interviewed another person who grew up in China during the Cultural Revolution, and I'm interested in what your perspective on it is, because Americans have this perspective that the Cultural Revolution was a very repressive time in China. But the other scholar that I interviewed said exactly the opposite. So I'm
wondering. Oh, repressive. I did not feel repressive because I think my parents were not that repressed by this revolution, since they were my father's heritage must be okay with the Chinese government. My grandparents were peasants, so it's considered red.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
So my mother's side is a little bit of a problem. It's more like a capitalist type of heritage, and but since they're both in military, and the military relatively are protected in the Cultural Revolution, so I don't feel they were repressed. And even though I sometimes work with my father in how do you say this? It's basically this military has a shower place, or to provide energy to, you know, during cold weather you need
a power plant.
Power plant, and this is burning the coals to burning coals to produce in this big stove to produce steam, then to warm the houses heat, for heat. So I actually was assigned to do that. So I remember.
How old were you then?
I think it was second or third grade.
Okay.
But I sort of think that was fun. It was not a repression. So especially from my perspective, growing up in the military compound, it was a lot of fun because you got to play a lot. And mostly, of course, we play with kids in this compound. And at the time, there was a lot of activity going on, you know, all these kids playing together and group activity a lot. And sometimes the group inside the compound will fight with the kids outside, throwing bricks on either side of the wall. And it was very typical at that time in Beijing, because there were many military compounds in all over the city. And there was all the time fighting between the military kids and the non-military kids. It's group fighting, hundreds of people involved. And there's a good movie describing that period of life. It won some award in some European movie festival.
What's the name of it?
Life Under the Sun.
Okay.
I don't know if that's how it's translated, but literally that's the name.
Okay.
It's describing this little kid growing up in the military compound, what his life is like during that period. And I saw that movie, I can relate it to it so much. Yes. And basically that movie tells you, it's also this kid have a lot of fun.
Now, did your family have its own apartment? Because I know there are periods of time in China where families had to share kitchen facilities. You know, they might have sleeping quarters that were their own, but there was a common kitchen.
I remember they always have their own units.
Their own.
Yeah. It's more like the condominium type of arrangement here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a stretch of units, and each family got a single unit, which is separated from the others. But they share walls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so I keep, so all these housing are in this compound.
Mm-hmm.
So we gradually moved, always keep moving. You know, with the houses bigger and bigger.
Oh, okay. So you, periodically you improved your...
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Because with their ranking moving up,
right.
they get older, then they move to the kind of houses that fits their ranking.
That what?
That fit.
The rank.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So how much of your life was inside this compound? Did you get out to do things, or did you pretty much live there?
Well, you go to school.
That was outside.
I was outside. Mm-hmm. After school, then pretty much inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go to shopping, then you have to go outside.
Mm-hmm.
Or you go to... Yeah, that time, if I was playing ping pong, actually the compound has better facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, a lot of time in this.
Yeah. Well, you know, American military bases have everything. They have shopping and they have movies and, you know, you could...
We have everything.
...conceivably never leave.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have small grocery shops
mm-hmm.
for some food and mm-hmm. stuff. But not for clothing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So that they have to go out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we this institute has everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they take care of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So how long did you live there? Did you spend the rest of your childhood there? Or?
Yes, I think pretty much. Mm-hmm. After I came to Beijing and then stayed out until I... graduated from high school.
Okay.
Then I went to university in Shanghai.
Okay. Okay, we're gonna get to that in a little while. But tell me a little bit about the school system. You know, here we have elementary school, then middle school, then high school. How is it where you were?
Okay, at that time we have the primary school that's 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
At that time there was just beginning the transition. In the before the Cultural Revolution, the primary school has to be 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Cultural Revolution, they shortened that into
okay.
5 years.
Okay.
So I ended up with 5 years of primary school. And then...
So till about 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then about 5 years of middle school and high school. Basically middle school for 3 years, high school for 2 years.
Okay.
That's okay. it.
So... How did elementary school differ from middle school and high school? You know, here it's...
Oh, they differ.
Well,
now,
here...
Usually there are different locations, different
mm-hmm.
Schools already.
Okay.
Here sometimes they have everything, you know, from first grade to 10th grade, right? All in one school.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Usually not.
Usually
not.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there is somewhere separate.
Okay.
And then, of course, the curricula are different.
Mm-hmm. Well, the big difference here is that in elementary school, the kids have one teacher the whole day.
Oh.
And then when they go to middle school, they have different classes. They go from class to class, so they have one teacher for history and one for English. And
so they're sort of like in the university setting, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. And they don't really have a fixed class.
Well, no, it's fixed, but it's different rooms. Different teachers. They go every day to the same classes, but...
Do you sit in the class with the same classmates every day?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
So what was it like there?
There, the classes was always fixed. For primary school, you stay with the same class for
mm-hmm.
all the 5 years.
Mm.
It's not like here. Every year they break up the class
yeah, yeah.
from my kids' experience.
Yeah.
And so, okay, you stay with the same class for the whole year. In, I think that's also true until high school, all the way through high school, you stay with the same class. And then the teachers, they assign the primary teacher responsible for the general activities of this class. This teacher can happen to teach different subjects, doesn't matter. He can teach mathematics or literature or history. But he also responsible for one of the classes. And then different teachers, different subjects will teach this class.
So the teachers come to you or you go to the teacher?
Teacher come to this class.
I see. Okay. And what you said you were, you know, academically you did very well and when you were little. Did that continue on?
Yeah, that continues on basically. And but that was not that demanding, the school classes. And then during the middle school, there was a lot of emphasis on the students who learn something else, in addition to the traditional classes. So learn from the peasants, learn from the workers, learn from the soldiers, you know. So each quarter we were sent to the, for example, sent to the farms to actually help the peasants to harvest the crops. And for 2 weeks maybe. And then some quarter we were trained by a soldier to walk,
march.
Straight, march, and things like that.
Did you like those things?
I think I don't like the farm work that much, but the training by the soldier seems okay. And also we were sent to hospitals to learn from the doctors how to treat patients. I remembered doing acupuncture.
Oh, really?
Yeah, myself on patients. I learned that I even remember data on my grandparents.
Oh, really? That was brave of them to let you do that.
But acupuncture is well accepted in Chinese, so they don't consider it that dangerous, I think.
Oh, no, but I mean it was brave of them to let a little kid do it.
Well, yeah, I know. This is, even the hospital, they let us do it.
Yeah.
And I also remember learn to sell stuff in a grocery store. So we did all these extracurricular activities during the middle school years. So you can see the classes are very light. There's no real pressure on performing well for these studies, since there was no future. It's that time nobody think they're going to end up going to universities because at that time universities are stopped recruiting students the normal way. This university recruits students from the the students who have worked in the countryside.
Right.
And then the selection was not based on academics.
Right. So at that point in your life, what did you think you were going to end up doing in the future?
One is I work real hard on my ping pong. And the other, I in the middle school, there's a good art teacher. So I at that time, you know, besides learning all this other stuff, they also encourage you to participate in clubs of music, art and stuff. So I was in one of the art clubs, groups they call. I remember doing very well in my painting. So at least in my school, I must be at the top. So that further got me interested in it. Up to this day, I never thought I had a talent in art.
Oh, really?
I always thought I did well in art because I trained hard. I was trained that way. But then I realized from my kid, his art, I have two kids, a younger one He's excellent in his art, just natural. That talent was noticed by the teacher in the kindergarten places. He just continues to be very good. Recently, one of his pictures was selected for exhibition at the San Diego Art Museum.
Oh, wow.
One out of 80 students in his class. And he said he didn't even pay attention. He just draw it, and that's it. And the teacher selected it.
Wow. Let me turn the tape over, and then you can tell me some more about that.